When I was a teenager, my friend Corey invited me along with several other buddies to go on a camping trip with them to a place called Jellystone Park in northern Indiana. So excited about this trip. They had a nice RV that we were able to stay in, cram packed, just a bunch of people in this camper trailer. Had an incredible time. It was 3 or 4 days, I think, in July. It was hot. Just incredible time. Glenn, Corey's dad, owned a boat. And so he said, on one of the days, we're going to go to the lake and we're going to do some tubing. So excited about doing tubing. I'd heard how much fun that was. And so we headed to the lake and started tubing around the lake. Just having an awesome time. Of course, as we're going around, there's several of us kids that are participating on this tubing excursion. As we're going around, we're starting to make this a contest. All of us are pretty competitive, and so starting to make this into a contest. And so we're asking Glenn to drive faster and faster as our friends are being pulled around on these tubes. And of course, as he's taking these corners and these turns, the tube is going out, it's getting on its side. And as this was going on, we came up with a phrase, very simple phrase, but if you would have been there and seen how Glenn was driving the boat, you would know why we just started to say, "Don't let go." And so we're yelling this as loud as we can, "Don't let go." Glenn, who was driving the boat, as I mentioned, I don't know why he was in such a bad mood. I don't know if he had had several bad days, but I'm pretty sure he was trying to kill whoever it was that was riding behind this boat on this tube. Now, that isn't actually from our day there. I just found that on the internet, but that's not too far off what was taking place. In fact, I remember at one point, Brandon, he rolled on the tube, and this is incredible. And I wouldn't consider Brandon a strong guy. Don't tell Brandon I said that. But the tube rolled, and he would manage to hold on as the tube actually flipped. It was incredible. I don't know how one of us didn't drown in this experience. But we were just saying, "Don't let go, don't let go." And the more we'd say it, Glenn's eyes would just get crazy as he were like, "Ah, I'm gonna try everything I can to get these guys to flip off of this tube." The phrase was simply, "Don't let go." Now, here's the deal with this letter to the Hebrews. I appreciate Ken reading a passage for us just a little bit ago. Many scholars believe that the overall purpose of this letter was to persuade Christians to persevere in the faith. One of the ways that the writer does this, to encourage them to persevere in the faith, is by pointing them once again to Jesus Christ, their Savior. In particular, he reminds, he does this really chapters 3, chapter 4, chapter 5, chapter 6, most of the letter, he talks to the audience, to these Christians that are persevering in the faith, about the fact that Jesus is their high priest. You see it in almost every chapter. And so this sermon is going to be structured like this. First of all, we're going to have a profile of Jesus as the high priest, some of what the Hebrews writer says about Jesus relative to him being the high priest. And then we'll look at what Jesus as high priest has done in the past, what he has done or what he is doing presently, and what he will do in the future. And so first, a profile, if you will, of Jesus as the high priest. We'll have this on the screen as well. First of all, he was a priest who was appointed by God. You see that in chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, and also chapter 5, verses 5 and 6. This priest, he serves in the heavenly, true tabernacle that's established by God. And now he sits at the right hand of God. You see that in chapter 9, verse 24, and chapter 10, and verse 12. This high priest is holy, blameless, pure. He's set apart from sinners. He's exalted above the heavens. He's a sinless human being, this high priest. He offered himself, and this has already been mentioned today, he has offered himself as a perfect, unblemished sacrifice, giving his own blood for sinful humanity, obtaining redemption and salvation for all who believe. And he ushered in a new covenant. And we are so thankful that we can be participants, if you will, if we can be under that new covenant that he ushered in. And so Jesus, our high priest, let's think about what he has done for us in the past. Let's go over to chapter 9 again. It already mentioned in his profile that he offered himself as a perfect, unblemished sacrifice, offering his own blood for us. Chapter 9, beginning at verse 1. Now the first covenant had regulations for worship and also an earthly sanctuary. A tabernacle was set up. In its first room were the lampstand and the table with its consecrated bread. This was called the holy place. Behind the second curtain was a room called the most holy place, which had the golden altar of incense and the gold-covered ark of the covenant. Many of those that the Hebrews writer was addressing had a Jewish heritage. They had come out of Judaism in this new faith in Jesus Christ. And so what he was sharing with them here about the tabernacle and all that was involved in it, the furnishings of the tabernacle, they would have been very familiar with this language. This ark contained, this is the second part of verse 4, this ark contained the gold jar of manna, Aaron's staff that had budded, and the stone tablets of the covenant. Above the ark were the cherubim and the glory, overshadowing the atonement cover or the mercy seat. But we cannot discuss these things in detail now. The key terms in this passage are found in verse 1. It's where he says the earthly sanctuary. The tabernacle with all of its furnishings was beautiful and amazing. And it's important to remember, this was all part of God's design. God ordained all that we read about here in chapter 9, verses 1 through 5. This is part of the pattern, the plan that God has for his people. So we need to remember that there's affirmation here. This was what God was doing. It's beautiful and amazing. And recognizing that will help us understand the writer's point as we get into verses 6 through 10. When everything had been arranged like this, the priests entered regularly into the outer room to carry on their ministry. But only the high priest entered the inner room, and that only once a year, and never without blood, which he offered for himself and for the sins of the people that had committed in ignorance. The Holy Spirit was showing by this that the way into the most holy place had not yet been disclosed as long as the first tabernacle was still functioning. This is an illustration for the present time, indicating that the gifts and sacrifices being offered were not able to clear the conscience of the worshiper. They are only a matter of food and drink and various ceremonial washings, external regulations applying until the time of the new order. And so the work of the high priest in the first covenant was important. But as the Hebrews writer mentions here, this is key, it didn't completely clear the conscience of God's people. The day after the Day of Atonement, people were once again pestered by the guilt of sin. This would persist until the next Day of Atonement, which would be a year later. The whole process, again, was God-given. It was beautiful and amazing, but it was incomplete. It didn't compare to what Christ had to offer. And that's the writer's point. It does not compare. It was a lead-in to more that God was going to do through his son, Jesus. And this we're going to see beginning at verse 11. But when Christ came as high priest of the good things that are now already here, he went through the greater and more perfect tabernacle that is not made with human hands. That is to say, is not part of this creation. So you've got this comparison going on here. The high priest of the old covenant, he entered the earthly sanctuary. Again, not a bad thing, designed after God's pattern. But with Jesus, the high priest, he entered the perfect heavenly tabernacle with direct access to God. Verse 12, he did not enter by means of the blood of goats and calves, but he entered the most holy place once for all by his own blood, thus obtaining eternal redemption. So the high priest of the old covenant, he entered the most holy place by the blood of animals once a year. Jesus, again comparing the two, entered the most holy place by his own perfect blood and only needed to offer his blood once. The blood of, this is verse 13, the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkled on those who are ceremonially unclean sanctify them so that they are outwardly clean. How much more then will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself unblemished to God, cleanse our consciences from acts that lead to death so that we may serve the living God? Again, high priest of the old covenant, sacrifice sanctifies the people so they are outwardly clean. But with Jesus, what do we see? It's an unblemished sacrifice, cleanses one completely, even one's conscience. He entered the most holy place on behalf of sinful humans to offer complete eternal forgiveness of sins. And here's what Jesus does as well, is once he enters that most holy place with as a perfect sacrifice, he allows from that point forward all people through him to have that access to God. So as I mentioned, it's well documented that the Hebrews writer was encouraging Christians who were ready to let go of the faith. This letter is a plea for Christians to remain strong, to hold tightly to their faith in Jesus. I love how one person put it. Imagine that there are, we could even use a setting like this. It's a worship service in a large group. Of you just decide, you know what? Maybe it's because of the preaching. I don't know. But a large group of you say, we're done. We've had enough. First of all, that'd be really awkward if you all did that right now. But imagine you're all out there in the parking lot. You've got your keys in your hands, grabbing your coat, say, done. You're out there somewhere in the parking lot. Yeah, one of us, hopefully several of us, we go out into the parking lot and we say, stop. Don't do it. Don't go. That's what the Hebrews writer is doing. Don't go. Don't let go of your faith in Jesus. What would you say to somebody if they say, had enough, I'm out of here? They start walking. What would you say to that person? The Hebrews writer says, let me remind you of what Jesus has done for you, offering himself as an unblemished lamb to God. He tells them about Jesus. Would you tell that person that was ready to give up about Jesus? What would you tell that person about Jesus? Jesus, he entered the most holy place on behalf of sinful humans to offer complete forgiveness and give us direct access to God. And so that's what he's done in the past. And there's more that we could say about that, but we're going to leave it at that and get on to what Jesus is doing presently. Sarah and I did a long-distance relationship for about 18 months. I would not recommend that you do that. Not the best scenario for dating, although it was cheaper that way. Actually, it wasn't, because several weekends I would travel over that 18 months. I traveled down to Oklahoma City to spend time with her. one of the elders, I was working with a church in Ohio at that time, one of the elders started calling these trips that I would do to Oklahoma love missions. I respectfully asked him to stop calling those trips love missions. He respectfully did not oblige. And so long-distance relationships are challenging. Perhaps you've done that at one point or another in your life. The Hebrews writer makes it clear that through Jesus, our high priest, we don't have a long-distance relationship with God. He says this in chapter 4, verses 14 through 16. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. And so we live in a fractured world. I don't know why God allows the kind of hurt, heartache, and hassle that we find. I don't know why he allows so much of that in our world. I wish I did know that. The audience that the Hebrews writer was addressing, perhaps they wondered the same thing. Why so much hurt? Why so much heartache? In fact, that might be the reason why they were ready to let go, to say enough already. It was too hard to see how Jesus fit into the reality of their complex world. Maybe around the dinner table, I don't know. Perhaps they had questions like this. Why are people being so hateful toward us? We love Jesus. So what? Why won't my friends speak to me anymore? If Jesus is so powerful, why won't he change things around here? If Jesus is truly, like the Hebrews writer says, if he is sitting at the right hand of the majesty's throne, couldn't he do something about my pain? Perhaps those questions aren't just first century questions. For some of these folks, letting go of the faith would at least mean they wouldn't have to wrestle anymore with how their allegiance to Jesus would impact their allegiance to the governing authorities at that time. Wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. They wouldn't have to explain to their friends why they now live so differently because they have a friend in Jesus. They wouldn't have to deal with all those pesky teachings from Jesus on handling money. Why is he all up in my business anyways? Caring for the poor, being honest, not lusting, going the second mile. Why such challenging teachings and living as citizens of the true kingdom? Something about being in the world but not of the world. Some of their friends, I'm sure of it, had already let go. Was it time for them to let go as well? The writer says, wait, don't go. Hold firmly to your faith in Jesus. In chapter 4, verses 14 through 16, says, this Jesus that I'm trying to encourage you to hold tightly to, he himself, he was tempted too, just like you. He'll help you when you're tempted. As we venture through the terrain of this fractured world, Jesus is with us. He gets it. He can help us along the way. Have you been tempted to fly off the handle as a coworker, at a coworker because of something they said or did? Jesus can help you deal with anger. Are you tempted by popularity and possessions? Jesus can help you have a proper perspective. Are you tempted to be lazy? Jesus can shape your work ethic. Are you tempted to take the easy way out? Jesus will give you strength to endure the hard way. Verse 16 again, let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. I love that the throne here, not judgment, not condemnation, not even law, is throne of grace. Approachable. There's this connection, and Jesus has paved the way for this connection. And we can approach Him with confidence, recognizing that He will work on our behalf, recognizing that He will receive us and hear us. And all of this, the Hebrews writer says, we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. I know I need some mercy. I need some grace. Maybe you do as well. He will provide that mercy and help in our time of need. So that's what the high priest is doing currently. And what will he do in the future? I'm going to make this part quick. Chapter 9, verses 27 to 28. It says, Jesus, just as people are destined to die once, and after that to face judgment, so Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many, and he will appear a second time, not to bear sin, but to bring salvation to those who are waiting for him. Those that the Hebrews writer was addressing, they were waiting for him. By faith, we believe that Jesus will return. Perhaps that's what we say to the folks that are in the parking lot with their keys ready to go. Jesus is going to come back. Will you be ready for him? Believe it. Trust him. And we could think of that in our own lives as well. The eternal high priest will come back for us. Will you be ready? And so don't let go. Jesus, our high priest, he offered himself as a perfect sacrifice for our sins. He died a cruel death on the cross for you and for me. And he is helping us on our journey. He's allowing us access to the Father so that we can find grace and mercy and help as we navigate all that life brings us. And he's going to return to offer us eternal salvation. Don't let go. The writer says, you have a high priest who has given you salvation, and he is with you in life. And then he says, we're going to look at Hebrews chapter 12, verses 18 through 29. By your relationship with this high priest. Okay, here's what I'm going to have you do. Please all stand. I'm going to read from Hebrews chapter 12, verses 18 through 29, then I'll offer the invitation. By your relationship with this high priest, listen to these words. You have not come to a mountain that can be touched and that is burning with fire, to darkness, gloom, and storm, to a trumpet blast, or to such a voice speaking words that those who heard it begged that no further word be spoken to them, because they could not bear what was commanded. If even an animal touches the mountain, it must be stoned to death. The sight was so terrifying that Moses said, I am trembling with fear. But you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. See to it that you do not refuse him who speaks. If they did not escape when they refused him who warned them of on earth, how much less will we if we turn away from him who warns us from heaven? At that time, his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens. The words once more indicate the removing of what can be shaken, that is, created things, so that what cannot be shaken remains, may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. There's anybody here today that is in need of the prayers of the church family, as we sing this song together, you can come forward and let us know. There's anybody here that wants us direct access to the Father through Jesus Christ, wanting to submit your life to Him in the waters of baptism, and we would love to witness you make that decision today. So whatever need you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship our God, who is a consuming fire.